Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Jackson, and this is the NBA Action with Jackson podcast. Today, we're going to be having on James Boo of Roll Call Sports, and we're going to be talking NBA All-Star teams, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, etc. Apologies on my end. Some of the sound quality is a bit below standard because of some setup issues, and also I'm dealing with a cold and sickness myself, so apologies for that. I do think that this is some great discussion and you guys will really enjoy it. We had a bunch of disagreement and, you know, we kind of went back and forth on it. Tired of hearing the same old takes from the same old people? Looking to add some humor, culture, and energy to your daily grind? Your search just might be over. At Rise Network, we're a global multimedia platform for the best and most diverse voices in sports, entertainment, and pop culture. Podcasts, streams, articles, reviews, you name it, we do it. Visit at Rise Network US on all social media platforms or visit www.risenetworkus.com for more info. So what are you waiting for? Come on and rise with us. All right, we have our first three-time guest on the show. He's actually the only multi-time guest. We have James at Free Malik Monk on Twitter. How are you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Just trying to not melt in the, January Melbourne Southern Hemisphere weather. But yeah, otherwise, not doing good. Very excited. Very excited and honored to be the first third-time guest. Got a daunting task ahead of us, but excited for it. So yeah.
Yeah, and Australia, it's the summer season, right? Right now?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone else who's listening is probably, freezing.
And then, it's really cold around.
Feet are falling off. And then, Yeah.
But anyways, awesome to have you on again. Always love having you on the show, of course, because you're the only two-time guest, let alone the only three-time guest. But today we got the
All-Star. Yeah, I mean, you got to change that, like.
I plan on having a bunch of people back, but yeah. I just always knew you're the guy I could rely on.
I think it just means I've got no responsibility in life, so I can just come on whenever. It's just easy scheduling for you, not so much the basketball stuff. But yeah, again, no. Yeah, let's go. What are we doing today?
We're doing the all-star teams. You want to do Eastern or Western Conference first?
I'll go maybe East, start off.
Okay, sweet. So I say we should both say our starters and then both say our reserves. What do you say?
Yeah.
All right, so for my starters, what were you going to say? Sorry.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. Yeah.
Anyways, for my starters in the East, I have Embiid, Giannis, Durant, DeRozan, and Trae Young. And for my reserves, I have Tatum, Allen, Butler, Harden, LaVine, Garland, Van Vliet, and Brown. And then that was 13 players because I'm going to have Harden start in place of Durant, and Brown's going to be the injury replacement.
Yeah, so I got the same starters, Trey, DeMar, Durant, Giannis, Embiid, and then my bench is Van Fleet, Levine, Butler, Siakam, Jared Allen, and then Harden and Tatum. Those are two wild cards. And then, yeah, injury replacement for Durant is Bam, so I guess not sure how I'm going to do this. Maybe Jimmy goes to starter and then the rest works itself out. That's not important anyway. So yeah, so I think our main difference is I got Bam and Pascal and you got Darius Garland and Jaylen Brown. Garland's definitely my biggest snub, by the way. Like he's gonna be the next guy again.
I was gonna add on, you had Butler as your injury replacement for the starter. He definitely would have been mine if he didn't miss so many games. To me, he's clearly been a notch above, for example, James Harden this season. This last starter spot, I didn't really want to throw in a Tatum or an Allen into that starting lineup. Yeah.
So kind of by default, it was Harden, but it's definitely been a notch below his typical season. But as you put it, Butler has definitely been the superior player this year. Just looking at one of our differences of you having Siakam, he was actually one of the last cuts for me. I feel like the last month especially, he's been turning it on more prominent.
Yeah, a bit of recency bias for me.
No, but I would definitely say this is the best he's played since pre-bubble in 1920. Yeah. I'm not watching the Raptors night in and night out as some people are, but just from when I have been able to catch them and my experience watching them, is he's definitely having a better season than last year. Obviously, the playoff struggles versus the Celtics are hopefully a thing of the past, and he's really playing good basketball now that he's back up to full health. And what was our other difference? Oh, yes, you left Garland off. What was the thinking behind that?
Oh, okay. So I think the main thing is I feel like there's still stretches of games where Garland could be a bit more, like, aggressive. And his ability to, you know, like, sacrifice himself, get a team going, like, he's like running off screens for threes and middies have been part of his game since the second year. So that's always been a part of his game. I love that about him. But like, I still think sometimes he, like my issue with him, especially like the start of the year, he just had an issue with like when, you know, realizing the, you know, the flow of the game, like when does he need to score? Like, you know, when his teammates miss five threes in a row, he's got to realize, yeah, okay, now I got to go hunt my own shot. And I feel like he really struggled with that early season. I think he's gotten a lot better recently. Like, he started to become a real three-level scorer, or two and a half, I guess, you know, because he's always going to be limited at the rim with his size. But, you know, started to find some real comfort in the mid-range. I think you tweeted the other day, or someone else tweeted about his obscene mid-range numbers. I think he's more than 50% from mid-range, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, it's just, you know, he's becoming more comfortable, you know, in isolation as well. But I just think, you know, there's another level of aggression he can go to and scoring, especially on this Cavs roster. Like, he's the only real consistent off-the-dribble creator. Like, it feels like they're getting cheap. Like, you know, you can only really count on Garland giving you, yeah, consistent off-the-dribble stuff. Everything else that they get is kind of night-by-night basis. You know, some nights might be Mobley dropping, was it 25 or 30 or whatever it was on Miles Turner?
Or Kevin Love destroying the Knicks. Although he's been playing really good lately.
Yeah, Kevin Love's been really good. Might be Jetty sometimes, you know. I feel like Jared Allen is kind of consistent as well, like mostly on the rolls, and then sometimes he'll give you, you know, something out of, you know, a face-up or something, but or a fake D'Angelo. But I think Jared Allen's very, like, plays within his limits type of guy. So I don't think he's a guy who's going to, like, make or break, like, a game, unless, like, they're a really bad rebounding team, like Charlotte or something, as an example. I think he, you know, it's been killing them for years. But yeah, I think so. Basically, I think he can take to another level. But at the same time, you know, they're winning a lot of games, probably a decent amount of blowouts at one point of the season, which would have, you know, made his numbers look a bit worse than they are. But yeah, I just think overall I'd like to see him, you know, yeah, get that scoring up just one more level, and he's not a starter. But yeah, great player. Good effort on defense this year too. So yeah, like I'm a big, yeah, it's just, I feel like, yeah, it's just Bam is a fantastic player, obviously.
I would have had him on if he didn't miss half the games. That was my, like, right.
So
kind of cut off, or he would have been a lock. He probably would have been my fifth starter for Durant if he would have qualified for the games. Him and Jimmy, like, both had great cases.
I did not think about game cutoff things, because the whole All-Star selection thing, like, it feels like there's so many different factors, and like, I'm not, like, some of them are inconsistently applied and stuff. I just picked, I looked at the games played, and I don't think anyone had, like, I feel like every player's played at least like 25. So, like, that's I don't know. That's the number I'm picking as
decent ballpark, you know, for everyone.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, you know, I still think, like, even though Garland, like, narrative wise, you know, breakout player, you know, leading one of the, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I just picked Jared Allen over Garland for importance, really. I don't think I can say much more than that. So, yeah, to be honest, even Mobley could be in some all-star conversations, I reckon, because, like, you know, you go through, like, you know, Garland, Allen, Mobley, and, like, their importance to the team. Like, I think Allen's the most important just because, you know, he does the dirty work as well as a center, but there's no way that what they're doing works without a unicorn like Mobley, who's giving you like that every now and then, a self-creation game. So, but yeah, I basically pick Allen over Garland. And yeah, I just explained where I think Garland can improve and make it. So I would pick him for this sort of thing.
So to add on to your point, two of my biggest snubs, I would say, Okay, so I had difficulty with kind of those back end guard spots with LaMelo and Jrue Holiday. I felt bad for leaving them off. And something I wanted to bounce off you is, how do you feel about the all-star cases of the Charlotte guys, the Cleveland guys, Miami? Some of those teams are really tricky. Cleveland, for example, you mentioned how Evan Mobley deserves a shout. And, you know, I just see discussion on it. And some of these teams where it's, you have two or three, say, top 30 or 40 players, it's so tricky to kind of give proper due and credit. And I think that's why there's so many differing opinions. But how did you kind of go into that?
I mean, I'm not looking too much into, I don't think there's a massive gap in record, for example, between like Charlotte and Toronto. So I think if like Charlotte was like, you know, a .650 or .700 team, and you know, and Toronto is where they are right now, I'd you know, probably be more swayed by that and, you know, force a Charlotte guy into it. But basically, like, Miles Bridges for Charlotte, yeah, Miles Bridges is my guy, but I think he just isn't quite there, like, in terms of like as a creator. Like, I think with Charlotte, it's so hard because they, like, no one in their starting five is above being benched in a close game. Like, start of the year, we saw it's LaMelo. I think a lot of games we see it's Rozier.
Not even Hayward.
No, Hayward's been benched, like, I reckon five times at least.
Yeah, I remember early in the season, they had Ish Smith close a few games.
Yeah, I think LaMelo is actually the most above it, even though I think it should be Miles Bridges. But yeah, like, and then, like, I feel like they haven't missed a beat when, like, if they have one of their core guys out, they can easily replace them. And, like, that's the thing. Like, every single game, it feels like one of their big players, or at least one, if not two,
one of their, like, four. Who do you consider their best players? Consider it to be LaMelo, Hayward, Bridges, or LaMelo, Bridges, Hayward, Rozier, probably. I wouldn't have Oubre in that echelon, even though I do think he's pretty good.
I think Oubre basically steps up every time one of the other guys is out. So I'm saying, like, sure, you can treat it as the top four, but, like, I think they only need really three of, like, those four in Oubre, and they'll be fine. Because even, like PJ Washington is a really good – he's a lot more than just, like, hit a corner three now and then. And then, like, Cody Martin's been more comfortable taking guys off the dribble. Like, Jalen McDaniels is probably more of a pure, like, you know, spot-up guy. But even he gives you something in transition sometimes, and really good cutter, really good offensive rebound, and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and, you know, if they need to play Ish Smith, he's a baller. Book Knight gives you something. Like, Book Knight is giving you buckets every time he plays too. So
it's,
like,
crazy how little the rookies have played for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, like, a good team, so it's kind of understandable. But if you would have told me that Book Knight basically didn't play at all, I wouldn't have been surprised. But, like, I think him and Thor are both towards the bottom in first-round pick minutes.
Yeah, and they've been playing well. Like, it's crazy. Like, JT Thor has played well when he's come in. Booker has played well when he's come in. Like, you get rookies like that, generally, they're going to play big minutes. You know, there's been some rookies. Yeah, exactly. Like, if Booker, JT Thor, there's some rookies out there that have played around their level, I'd say, not clearly better, who've just, as soon as they've played a few games, they got that, like, trust from the coach and basically been a fixture of the rotation since then. And then JT Thor and Booker have had multiple of those performance, like breakout performances, I would say, but haven't been rewarded. And again, like, fair enough. You know, if you're not going to make a move, clear out players, I kind of get Rager's decisions here. But I do think they need to clear out the roster a little bit. Charlotte, I think it's hard because I don't think they've clearly shown one player is the super reliant on one player. Like, I would say their most important player is Miles Bridges, but then at some times you could probably just like do without, because I think he does a little bit of everything, and I think a few of their players are a bit one dimensional, and I think that's why they get benched all, like LaMelo, Terry, Hayward, or great offensive players, but they really don't give you that much on defense. I don't think Oubre has been that good on defense either. Thor is a lot better in Golden State. I think Miles is the guy who, like, you know, if they need to stop, he's the guy who either makes a crucial weak side block or, you know, takes the challenge of guarding the best player. So it's just a little, like, intangible thing like that. I can see an argument for LaMelo being the best. I can see an argument for Hayward being the best, but I do think Miles is the most important. But I don't think he's an all-star caliber player. So that's my thing with them. Who else did you mention?
Well, we were just talking about how you threw Evan Mobley in the ring for deserving consideration. And then I thought teams like Cleveland, Charlotte, and then, for example, Miami, how I had Jimmy Butler on my roster. You had Jimmy Butler. And then I would have had Bam if he played more games. You had Bam, of course. And then I thought to myself, like, if they got a third all-star, who should be in consider for that spot? Is it Kyle Lowry or Tyler Harrow? Because Harrow's second on the team in minutes, and they're the first seed in the Eastern Conference. So that's a prominent role. Harrow's at the same time, I've bounced the theory off some Heat fans and gotten back that they'd give the nod to Kyle Lowry. Obviously, he's the little things king. Definitely not the same shot maker he was, say, three seasons ago. But he's got pull-up shooting ability, just paramount for their transition offense. Still a good defender. I don't know if he'll ever make all defense again, but he really just kind of helps everything click. So those are some interesting kind of dynamics within.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's kind of similar to, like, what I was just talking about, like, the Miles-LaMelo dynamic. Like, they both bring, like, different things. One of them is a bit more well-rounded and versatile, but, like, obviously they can't do without either. So, great All-Star Cup this year. Like, the guards, they're all, like, I think there's no, like, I think if... Oh, gee, yeah. Now that I think about it, Garland versus Lowry is pretty interesting. I think you got to give it to Garland just because, like, the story of the Cavs, them being unexpected. But, yeah, like, say it was Fuck, that's a tough one. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm with you on the Hero thing, too. Like, he's, like, every time someone's out, he starts. It seems like he's giving them really consistent production, too. And then, like... Yeah, like, so what can you say? But, yeah, I mean, I do think, like, I'm pretty comfortable leaving, like, Lowry or Hero out. Like, I don't think they have a clear case of anyone picked, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think I wanted to give them some mention because they deserve that, but I didn't really strongly consider either of them. And then I didn't consider – very strongly for my roster was Bradley Beal and Chris Middleton, and those guys have kind of been perennial all-star candidates. And maybe it's recency bias with the Wizards, because despite them being you know, around 500, more or less what I expected coming into the season. I just haven't been too impressed with Beal. Obviously shooting the three-point shot much lower than he typically has. And I don't know if it's just the feeling of malaise on their team. And then with Chris Middleton, I'm honestly not too concerned with him or the Bucks. I just think they have a lot of different moving parts kind of in and out of the lineup with DiVincenzo coming back, Lopez missing time. They signed again Wes Matthews, and George Hill is playing good. So I think they're just kind of trying to figure out the harmony of the team. But those are two great gifted pull-up scorers that I really didn't give serious mention to or really much consideration at all. They were pretty early cuts in my process. What are your kind of thoughts on their season?
I haven't really watched a whole lot of like Beal or Middleton really, but yeah, like, so the main reason I just didn't pick them is just looking at their splits, really, like looking at those numbers not being that good. I still think like it's obviously been a down season for Beal. Like they won a lot of games early, just like riding like Harrell, like, you know, when, you know, when teams can't guard him, he just, you know, goes crazy and gives you like a 20 and 10. So, and like breaks, you know, there's just all those putbacks and powerful finishes. You can just see the other team, you know, start to wilt as that thing happens. So I think they rode the Trez effects really well. And then, I don't really know. I don't think I've watched enough to comment really. You know, the few games I've watched, Beal still very much a problem inside the arc, but yeah, outside the arc, it's been a bit of a problem. And then Middleton, same. I totally agree, like, with the moving parts thing. So I don't have much to add on those guys. Sorry.
No, that's a good answer. In a way, you kind of summed it up perfectly, because, like, I was just like, you know, that's their season, whatever. Not to discredit them or say they're playing poorly, just kind of the way it shakes out with how
deep everything is. Like they're above the all-star consideration threshold, right? Like if they shot 5% better from three or whatever, like we might both have them. So just the way it shakes out, I guess.
Before we move on to the Western Conference, I wanted to give you the runway for your Siakam case. We hit on it a bit earlier, but I think really in recent weeks, he's picked it up quite a bit. I remember earlier in the season, to me, it felt like kind of these lanky guys, and then Fred VanVleet was kind of leading the charge with his pull-up shooting, and he had some brief cameos of him actually finishing around the rim. And now, not that it's a competition or anything, but Siakam's really beginning to pull his weight, and I've watched a bit. I probably need to watch more to confirm, but in recent weeks, I definitely think we're getting back to this is all NBA, Pascal Siakam, like that level of player. And I'm glad you put him on the roster because he's just played great this year, and I think it's good that he gets some mention. But what is your kind of – just what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like the recent stretch where he started to, it's not been just Fred doing everything. Like Pascal started to exactly play as their best player, you know, every second night or something. I think that's the main thing. Like Pascal, I think the main thing is just like everything come together again. Like for a period, the last 18 months, his touch was gone. Last year, there were some periods where his defense slipped a bit. His three ball is not really back, but last year he was better in the mid range, and then this year he's consolidated on that. So I just think it's the best Pascal Siakam we've ever seen. So much more comfortable like reading defenses compared to like a year or longer ago. Just knows he's starting to become a legitimate primary ball handler option at times. You combine that with everything else he does. I just think, just on the totality of his game, he's always in the conversation anyway, I think. But then, really starting to embrace the responsibility of being the guy in this last month or so. Like, I'm so impressed. And he just has, yeah, much more to his game. Like, if you put Siakam, you know, with how comfortable he is in his mid-range right now in that Celtics bubble series, I don't know, like, there's no way he struggles that much, I think. So, yeah. Yeah.
I might be completely off base here, but obviously Van Vliet probably is the more prominent ball handler. But other than him, I would say that Siakam definitely does more initiation than Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent Jr.
And OG.
Their roles are kind of the inverse of what you thought Scottie Barnes would be coming into the league. And then what we thought, I didn't really follow the draft back then, but what Pascal Siakam would be, where he came in as like a energy big. I remember when he was starting, when Dwayne Casey was the coach and his lineups were not doing very good and all that. But obviously he saw something and it paid off in the long run. But just seeing it now, it's where Siakam, he has a couple of his pet moves he can get to and really finish around the rim, get to the free throw line, and just how much ball handling responsibility he has. It's really interesting to kind of see this team. They got a lot of interesting players I need to detail even further. Even a guy like Precious Achiuwa, where on my timeline, he gets made fun of a lot, but same time, his energy and activity on defense, like there's something there. Yeah. So I can kind of see both sides of it, but
Shout out my boy TMN.
Yeah, he's probably pushing the Precious agenda more than anyone.
Yeah, because I mean,
everyone says he's shooting so bad as a center.
Yeah, like every offensive possession he's involved in almost was a get slander. And like obviously there isn't reason for that, but like you gotta talk about the whole thing. Like, you know, when we're discussing Jared Vanderbilt, we don't just say, you know, he drops catches in offense. Like the conversation with him starts with his defense. So I feel like it should start with that for, you know, Precious too. So
that's actually an interesting parallel. I wonder how things would look if we flip-flopped Achiuwa and Vanderbilt. I haven't watched Precious enough to really comment on that too much, but they're both guys that have great feet, great activity level. I noted before we were recording that I think Vanderbilt has horrid hands on the offensive end, that is. But
yeah, different problems. Like, I think they both got similar athletic limitations, though, like in the dunker spot. Like, they both just don't go
up. They're both good athletes, but I don't know if they're the type that, like, from the dunker spot, they explode.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a pretty good comparison. I'm happy with that one.
Yeah, not to get too deep into Vanderbilt, but I feel like a lot of his pick and roll, like he'll like slip the screen and it'll be wide open and he gets a runway to the rim.
Yeah,
that's kind of how he operates. But for the Western Conference All-Stars, let me see what our differences were. We actually had some interesting kind of contrasts here. I like that you had D'Lo as an injury replacement, right?
Yeah, I mean, we should read the names out first, right?
Yeah, you can go first this time.
Okay, so starters, Ja, Steph, Paul George, Draymond Green. The thing is, I forgot that it was the format because I would have had Gobert ahead of Draymond. But that one's close enough anyway, like whatever. You know,
yeah, that can go either way.
Five picks. So Ja, Steph, Paul George, Draymond, Jokic, and then Chris Paul, Mitchell, Jaren, Doncic, Gobert, and then LeBron and Booker. And then, so Paul George, Draymond out, obviously. So injury replacements, one, DeJounte Murray, and the second one is D'Angelo Russell.
All right, I'll say mine. So for the starting lineup, I had Gobert, Jokic, LeBron, Donovan Mitchell, and Stephen Curry. Just to say, this recent stretch by the Jazz has been disastrous, but I do think that Donovan Mitchell is a little bit better of a player than Ja Morant, so I kind of leaned on that.
Because I've been like, Warriors is one of the teams I've been watching the most. And Ja gives us, like, I shouldn't say us because I say that for like five times, but like, Ja gives the Warriors the most problems of anyone in the league at the moment. Like, I don't know, that's just by a mile, I think. Like, Spider, you know, there are some matchups where his like outside shot making is, you know, obviously their worlds about there, like that gives him a big edge on Jar. But against the Warriors, like, I think, yeah, Jar's the guy I'm most afraid of guarding from a Warriors perspective in the playoffs. So yeah.
Why is that? Just because the best options are probably Wiggins or GP2, and he's just way too quick for them.
Yeah, like there are guys who would, like, yeah, exactly. I think I've said this a couple times. He's got that like Shea level like change of direction ability, but he's also got the first step. So like, just combine that, and like, you know, like if he just had the first step. Like if it was kind of like Fox, you know, or Westbrook, that sort of thing, like there'd still be, you know, scenarios where that speed is too much for like a Wiggins, for example. But he would get his fair share of wins as well. But then when you add in like all that stuff as well, and I don't think Wiggins has had an extended period of time to figure out how Jar plays. Like, he didn't really guard him much at all in last year's play-in, and then this year, like, he got the first matchup, but the first matchup was just getting around screens mainly, so it wasn't really testing his one-on-one ability. So we'll see. Like, we'll see if, you know, over the course of the series, Wiggins figures out Jar's cadence a bit more. Who knows? He could, because if you look at the way he guards, like, Kawhi Leonard, he, like, you can tell, like, that's a guy that really studies the film, studies the tendencies. But yeah, like, and then GP2, like, he just... Not like Jar, you know, the thing that impressed me the most basically in the play-in, and then the thing that really pushed him over the edge for me was just watching him, like, he can also be physical, bump Floyd up, kill you with that shot. And then he hasn't really even shown that against GP2 yet, but if he gets him in single, like, in a playoff series, he's gonna take him to school with that move, I think. So, yeah.
Well said. But for my bench on the Western Conference All-Stars, this is kind of where the differences become apparent. I have Kat, Draymond, who I have marked as an injured player, and I'll have an injury replacement for him. And then Luka, I had him as a front court player.
Yeah.
I could have put him as backcourt. I really don't recall what he's listed on as on the NBA.com website. Then I have Devin Booker, Ja Morant, Chris Paul, Ant, and then my injury replacement for Draymond is Brandon Ingram, who I think is played really well over the last 6 weeks or so. When he came back from injury initially, he struggled a bit. Yeah. But the Pelicans are just a completely different team when he's playing. I like the
synergy
that him and Valanciunas have. And I think a guy like him, he's huge for Devontae Graham being a productive player, or even a guy like Josh Hart just being this slashing machine off the catch and transition athlete.
Sure.
But the three biggest differences we had, let me check. So you had DeJounte, D'Lo, Jaren, and I had Ant, Ingram.
Yeah, so you also didn't pick Paul George because of missing games last year.
Yeah, missing games. He probably would have started the game, to be honest, over – actually, I don't know if he would have started. It would have been close. Depends if I could put him as a guard, I might have put him over Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. But Paul George definitely would have been on the team. For example, I think he's had a better season than Kat has, in my opinion, in the games he's played, but he's been out about 5 weeks now, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. And then you weigh in that he might get season ending surgery, excuse me. And you know, if he plays no more games the rest of the way. But
see,
the D'Lo pick.
Yeah, yeah. I know we're both D'Lo fans, one guy. So have you seen our differences yet? Because I'll just say it. Like, I got DeJounte, D'Lo, Jaren. You got Ant, Kat, and Ingram. So that's the difference.
Yeah, and my last kind of spot, the last two spots, I guess you could say, came down to Ant, Ingram, Anthony Davis, and DeJounte Murray.
Yeah.
And I considered D'Lo a bit. It's probably a recency bias thing. Although Russell's starting to just the past 2 weeks or so, since he came back from COVID protocols, he's been a machine making shots. Just people always say like this is like the ball don't stop take, but he really is the guy on the Timberwolves who can get it out of the mud. Like anytime they need a shot, he's the hub for that. And with teams playing Cat with a smaller defender, double teaming him a lot, kind of shading the gaps against him, you need a guy like D'Lo in the half court that can make pull up shots. And also, offhand note, that's why Jalen Noel is kind of risen to prominence now, because they need Malik Beasley shooting. But if you can close out good versus Beasley, you can live with him taking a floater or whatever it may be. So that's why Noel has been so big. But I like the D'Lo pick. I don't think it'll be very popular on Twitter, but I don't think that it's a bad pick by any means. And I actually do go back and forth on how important him and Ann are for the Timberwolves, because there's definitely an argument that he's the second most important player on the team. And I'd say the past month or so, he might be playing the best ball on the squad.
I've had him as most important, like, before he came back from COVID and started scorching with like that's so far.
Was that you? There was a poll out there where someone posted who was the best player on the Wolves, and you said D'Lo should get more love.
Yeah, I took offense to the fact he had 6% of the vote. I think it's whatever. But I do think, like, I feel like, and part of it, this is D'Lo being a point guard. Like, he said this presses, like, he's just got to, you know, it's his job to get Cat and Ann going out of anyone. So, but I do think, like, kind of the Timberwolves want Ant and Cat to be their guys. Like, I think they're the two guys who get prioritized the most at the start of games and that sort of thing. And just like they're given, like, if Ant is cooking, then he's going to get the ball at the late game. I think he's the priority this season, really, just developing him. And why wouldn't that be? But I think if this was D'Lo's team, I'm pretty sure like Nas would close like most games, and their offense would just run differently. But yeah, like, so I kind of get, like, you know, it, like, if, you know, sorry, I'm doing that waffling thing again. So D'Lo, basically, I think ideally for them is a third option, and at times is treated as a third option. And his type of guy, like, because he's not a good defender, he probably needs to be leading an offense, I think, to make up for the defensive stuff in some people's eyes. And I totally get that, to be honest. But I just think, like, he's the best player in the Timberwolves. But it's hard. Like Cat's been playing well. Like, I give him so much flack. But I feel like especially the last 2 months, he's been really good. He's had some really, like, he's actually had those games where, you know, he's played as a number one guy and just taking control of the game for a few minutes. So, and then Ant obviously can do that as well. So, I'm fine with it either way, but I just think, like, consistency-wise, like, I think D'Lo, you know, he makes the least mistakes. He's most comfortable in the high leverage situations. And he's just the most consistent, I think. So, he's my guy.
I like that. Something that I wanted to ask you lost my train of thought with the Western Conference All-Stars. Sorry. Before every season, I always, you know, kind of think about the landscape of the league and kind of how I view players. And I always say to myself, like, I would rather have Karl Anthony Towns than Gobert and Draymond. And then it comes time to put together the All-Star ballot, the all NBA teams. And I'm like, would I rather have Kat? And technically I had Kat above Draymond on my roster, but Draymond's missed time. I don't know how that would have shaken out if he wasn't injured. But just I don't think it's unfair to say that Gobert's been a better player than Kat this season. I know that he's had a different role defensively where he's hedging a lot more, moving a lot more on the perimeter, and I give him credit for buying into that and having the game plan discipline and executing that scheme. But just the times where he takes 8 shots in a game, 7 shots in a game versus Portland, 10 shots in a game, or he fouls out of a game or he just gets taken out of it mentally. Those kind of things kind of weigh against me. And I know it's like that saying where people remember the bad, and that is true. People remember the bad, but I just feel like I like the D'Lo recognition because he is one of the leaders on the team. He is so important to the whole ecosystem clicking because he's got that laid back demeanor. I think he can get through both to Carl and Ant so well. And
very well said.
Ant's always going to have that infectious energy, but in terms of focus, it can be hit or miss every night. Some nights he'll come into a game, even versus Portland, for example, where he was launching threes.
Yeah.
And then he kind of honed it in and started driving and attacking the rim. So I really like the D'Lo shout.
You mentioned the Portland game. Like, I feel like that is actually a step forward for Kat in that. I feel like he had a few big rebounds in that, I think it was third quarter. Like,
where 17 boards overall too.
Yeah, like I don't think they really made a run, but they kept the game from getting too out of hand. Even though, like, to be honest, Portland should have won that. If Ant Simons hit like just a couple more wide open threes,
they were playing with fire. I feel like all three of their guards missed some pretty good looks late.
But still, like, I think that's the thing for Kat. Like, if he can just in those games where the driving's not working, and I think the thing is, as you said, like focusing on the bad, like I've got issues with Kat's process as a driver and stuff, but I think it works more often than I say it does. I just focus on the bad, but when it doesn't work, it really just snowballs, as you're saying. So I feel like if he can just have that ability to just be a defender and just be like crash the glass on offense, just roll to the rim, just make smart reads. If he can just have that ability, if he can switch of, flick the switch to that when all the other crazy stuff he's doing isn't working, then I'd easily have him in the all-star, maybe even all-star starter conversation. But it's just that volatility, just really fucking pissed me off. So, do you have a rating on this? Do I need to go lower on the profanity moving forward?
No, it's all good.
Okay, sorry about that. So I think again, you said it really well, focusing on the bad. I think Kat's analysis is a big part of that. But it's just like in theory, he really should be like just as good, if not better than like a Rudy or a Bam. But he just needs to, add that layer to his game. And I think he's there. But for now, he's not. And then I think his defense has been really hit or miss, to be honest. Like, and I think that's the whole thing that ties into the volatility thing. But like, I just think he doesn't quite play with enough urgency as he sometimes needs. Like for example, if the other team runs an action where it's like screen to screen type thing, Kat will often be late coming out to the ball screen and they'll be out of position hedging. And I just think like he's a mobile guy. He's a smart defender when locked in. Like that shit should not happen as much as it does. I feel like a good ball handler gets past his hip way too frequently on hedges. Guarding on an island, he sometimes can side with guys. So, like, how's that happening?
I think he's good at initially bumping the guy, but he's not always good at limiting their, containing their drive or making the pass to the middle of the floor a little more difficult. I feel like that's the biggest issue. Sometimes, when they face, say, Utah, I feel like when they play the Jazz, the Jazz always get it to the roll.
Yeah.
Kat's hedging, and then it's going to be a dunk for Gobert.
It's puzzling, right? Like, he's got good hands too. Like his thing in drop was he used to be so good at like targeting the angles, pocket passes, getting that hand in. Don't know what's happened. I was just about to say Atlanta, but then I realized Atlanta's another team that kind of cooks them. But I think Atlanta, like when they turn it up the whole way with the ball pressure and just blitz Trey, like they actually do quite well. Like that's what you're saying, bump the ball handler. And I think they kind of recognize they need to go a bit more extreme with Atlanta versus Trey's just that good, really. So, it turned into another mini podcast. We even got a Jalen Noel shout out in the middle there from you, which is good. But what's the next agenda point for the All-Stars?
We got to talk Noel. I'm glad he's playing, and it seems like he has a prominent role with the team. But really, the main two things we got to hit on is you didn't have Ingram We basically talked Ant, Cat, D'Lo already. And then you had DeJounte and Triple J.
Triple J.
Murray was a very, very close final cut. It was basically between him, AD, all them. And I gave consideration to Jaren Jackson Jr., but ultimately I just – the front court in the West, actually in both conferences, is just so loaded. He has a really good all-defense case. I've done in my head right now, I'd probably put him on the second team. I think a lot of Memphis fans would be upset because – as far as last time I checked, the tracking numbers for his rim protection and shot contest was incredible. I'm talking like 8, 9, 10% worse than a player typically shoots. I'll have to refresh myself on that. I don't want to
get
too out of whack, but great defensive year for him. I feel like the offensive game has been kind of hit or miss at times, and I don't know if that's just him slotting into his team with how much with Desmond Bane having a great year.
Yeah.
Dylan Brooks is a guy that's going to take his shots kind of regardless of what's going on around him. What for you, what was the calling for you to say, okay, Jaren Jackson is an NBA All-Star this year?
Yeah. It honestly might just be the same like thing with Kat as like focusing too much on Kat and AD's flaws, but I just feel like Jaren, young legs, you know, he doesn't have those games where he just randomly just doesn't have it. His defensively, I think he's been a lot better than those two. Actually putting Cat in the AD, like next to AD is probably wrong. But yeah, I think like compared to AD, because AD is probably the guy that's tough for him, I just think, Jaren brings it every night. And that's the thing I'm focusing on probably. I think offensively, from what I've seen, I'm really liking I know he's got things to work on, like as a self-creator, like, you know, he's very clearly slanted towards going left at the moment. But I just really like how, it's interesting. Like, I think, as you said, like Memphis might be kind of like Charlotte, where everyone kind of collectively looks a little bit below where they are because they just got so much talent. Because, like, they're starting small forward, if it's Zaire Williams, like, he'll sometimes give you something, you know, coming off a pin down or a handoff or something. That's his potential as a shot-making, playmaking wing. So, yeah, like, I just think Jaren's done some really good, really interesting things off the dribble. I think probably the main thing is, like, I've been displeased at AD's play as much as anything. But, yeah, the defensive Jaren, I don't know. It's a regular season thing to All-Star, and I just think Jaren does those things that I'm talking about matter a lot in the regular season, like the effort, you know, being locked in, playing hard. Yeah, I think – so basically Jaren just – I think with his self-creation, his driving, he took that – and, you know, defense coming together, like he just took that step to where he made even into that All-Star range. And then otherwise, I think I'm not a huge fan of the West front court. Like LeBron is – what? Do I have him as – I got him as a wild card technically. So I just think, you know, those guys, when it comes down to in the playoffs, they're going to be – better than Jaren, obviously. They're going to be top 10 players, LeBron and AD, but regular season, like, I just want to reward, like...
Yeah, that's understandable. Just, like, play during the season, night in, night out.
Yeah.
I get
That's definitely my, like, overall focus with these All-Star teams. So, like, to me, Fred VanVleet was, like, a non-negotiable. So, like, actually, like, I'm not sure if Bill Middleton, if they're shooting better, like, I'm not sure they actually make it. Like, they'd be making it over a Drew or a Tatum. Not like Fred VanVleet's completely.
Yeah, VanVleet was a guy I had to find a spot for. He's been excellent this year. The last person or player we should hit on is DeJounte Murray. I would say he was one of my one or two last cuts. He does so much for the Spurs. I know that their record is not great, although the offensive rating, defensive rating, net rating kind of puts them in a brighter light. You could even make the case that they're kind of up towards that LA team kind of area standings.
Like they've just had a few injuries, right? Like just as they were kind of starting to figure little things, a few things out. Like, I'm really excited to watch them in the second half of the season. Yeah. Because I do think, I think they're better than, them versus New Orleans, that's a conversation. But I think they're, like, New Orleans without Zion, but I think they're better than them. So I think they're basically, like, yeah, I think they should be making the play-in.
You think they'll make the play-in?
I think they should be. Like, but I haven't watched enough of them to really – they're going to be the team I watch more of the second half season.
Sometimes I've tuned in and they're playing Josh Primo decent minutes. Yeah, yeah. But then I look and there's something there with Murray and Yak and
Can
do defensively with Derek White.
Yeah.
But then I'm reading Jake Fisher's reports today that he's been in trade discussions. It's like,
right.
Like, what's the direction of this team if they're taking calls on Yak and Derek White? But they're an interesting team. I do worry about kind of their just their late game offense. Also,
that's the issue. I think they're six and 15 in close games.
That they're kind of set up for the regular season right now to where they should be a team that kind of catches you off guard. They compete with you the whole game and they grind out wins. But then they're not winning close games this year. And that's why I think that their record is worse than they actually are, because they're a team that plays okay on offense, plays good defense, and then just end of game execution, it's not going to be there night to night basis. But
yeah,
the way that Jakob Poeltl's playing, DeJounte Murray's playing, Derek White, we'll see if he remains on the team through the end of the season. Then they got some other guys, you know, Keldon Johnson, Lonnie Walker, Josh Primo, those guys are kind of, I feel like each of those players kind of has their own sector of fandom on Twitter where everyone has their kind of flavor of the month Spurs player that they think is going to break out. And I didn't even mention Devin Vassell.
Yeah.
But
I think
they kind of have an interesting setup going on. I don't want to get his name wrong. Is his name Jack Lawndale?
Jock Landale, yeah.
Yeah, he's had a couple interesting cameos this season.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just kind of always appreciate the teams like them. What I thought the Kings were doing this season to where they're going to be as competitive as they want to be or can possibly be and just squeeze every ounce of everything they can out of a given roster. Kind of like the Pelicans and the Spurs this year, but man, the Kings. I said I'm a Kings fan a couple weeks ago, and then it just goes to this. I picked the wrong time to pick them up.
Yeah, we can pass that team jinx NBA Twitter tag onto you instead of me, because it was like, I've gotten that a lot. So I probably need to lean into my Warriors fandom a bit more, share those tags. But yeah, so DeJounte, I think he's kind of like Fred VanVleet. Like, even though Derek White's probably the main point of attack defender, I just think kind of like Fred VanVleet. Like, just like two-way play. If you guard and initiate the offense, like, automatically that alone gets you like really high. Because those
FVV, Drew Holiday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and then I just went through a bit of film recently, and I've just been really impressed. Like, it feels like DeJounte's figured out drop. I really like how he engages the drop bigs and finds ways to get the ball to the roller in the pick and roll. I love his, like, ball handling scoring game. I think it'd be – if he had either better three-point shooting or he had better process against, like, three-man pick and roll coverages, because, if he had either of those skills, I think it'd be a much more clear pick. But still, like, I think, we talk about, like, with Ingram, like, a lot of the talk is about how poor his context is, like, the teammates around him. For one, I don't think that should be so much of the discourse, because, like, Herb Jones, Avonte, Josh Hart, Valanciunas, there's some good players there. And then, the Spurs, it's the same. Like, you have Derek White, Yak, and then on any given night, who's playing
best NBA guys around them, basically.
Yeah, they got NBA guys around them. But, like, like DeJounte, the Spurs or something are shooting like, I don't know the exact stat, but they're shooting really poorly. You can see like Derek White, Lonnie, even Giselle, they're all shooting well below. They're just shooting not very well, given that what they should be to shoot, I think. So, so I think that kind of hurts DeJounte a bit. But like, for example, like, I think DeJounte, for one, like, he's playing very pass first. Like, he's, if a draft's cut off, he's just immediately looking to pass because he knows, for one, his teammates can make a playoff for cash. But I think that's also like, maybe he understands that he's point guard on the team with a lot of guys who can kind of do interesting things and deserve the ball to an extent. So maybe it's just, you know, that's his taking that accountability of being the point guard. So I really like that. And then, I think he's like a closer level guy. Like his, you sent me his CMG, like his, what is it? His 0.965 points per position on off the dribble jumpers. And I think like, basically I'd really trust his, like, his, you know, the pull up midi off the pick and roll.
Yeah, he has a good pull up shot kind of around the elbow areas.
It's beautiful. Ago. Like the cross into the pull up is just picture perfect.
Like if you go under, he can come off the screen and hit that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about Murray. I wouldn't say I haven't watched enough, but I don't really feel too strongly either way. Some people are saying that his assist numbers are kind of inflated because of how much of a ball handling role he has on a team. Obviously his rebounding numbers are tremendous too, and I do think that actually is because he's one of the best rebounding guards in the league.
Yes.
I think that's been the case since he came into the league. I don't have an issue with that. I haven't seen complaint with that, but I did see I can't remember who tweeted it, but it was a graph. I think it was based on time of possession or touches.
I'll pull up his name numbers. as you're saying this.
Basically alluded that Murray's assist totals are kind of juiced by how often he has the ball and how much he needs to initiate.
Okay, so at @MarkC_NBA, so a guy at Stadium Speak on Instagram, does a lot of the graphic, really good graphics. He pointed this out. So basically, I think there's a few things. Like for one, like even like Bryn Forbes, Dougie McBuckets, but also obviously like the move without the ball can make a play off a catch, especially like probably not so much Dougie, but Forbes has a little like jab and floater type thing. And they move without the ball as well. So like, yeah, I think part of it is DeJounte because he handles the ball a lot, drives a lot. Doesn't necessarily create advantages, but just his driving creates a diversion for his teammates to relocate, cut through all that stuff, and he's hitting cutters. But I think also, like, there's also, like, the fact that he's such a good rebound and good at those hit-ahead passes, gets it quickly to the other guys, you know, as they're filling lanes. Like, that's merited assists. Like, those aren't inflated assists. Like, if you're grabbing the rebound and just pushing it like that, yeah, you deserve those assists for one. And then I think the other one is, as I was saying earlier, like if his drive's cut off, he's just going to pass it most of the time instead of looking for a counter, unless it's probably like game offense. And then with his handle and talent, like he's easily a guy who could be like hunting his own shot more, but he doesn't, and he looks to pass. And then that's the thing, like all those guys, you know, Devo, Keldon, Derek White, Lonnie, they can all make plays off the catch, and they can all White and Lonnie, especially, I feel like they've got like zero consciousness as shooters. Like they'll get up what I would say are probably pretty bad shots, but I think it's kind of necessary for the Spurs offense because their half court just isn't quite there. Like I think they also play quite fast as well. Like I saw a lot of DeJounte. I went through DeJounte's assists yesterday, and a lot of them are like transition threes or just like contested threes without an advantage.
I feel like in the past 3 or 4 seasons, the Spurs, quote unquote, like star players, best players have kind of operated around the basket. And then from the mid-range areas, you look at Murray and DeRozan, definitely prefer to drive. And then there's going to be a lot of like driving kick to role players. And then this year they got, Doug McDermott, obviously he can come off like a staggered screen or come off a pin down and shoot a three, but again, great catch and shoot player. DeRozan kind of rose to prominence in San Antonio as a passer. He made the leap there. So they're kind of a unique team to where I think that the guys who have the ball the most, they're not going to be like attempting 3-point shots all the time, but their role players are kind of going to prop their offense up.
Yeah. That way. Yeah. And like, yeah, exactly. It's not a bad spot for role player, because it feels like they've got a bit of freedom to do stuff. But if you aren't a good 3-point shooter, like Derek White, I think he's a guy who, if you're on another team apart from the Spurs, because it feels like he's sacrificing his game every time he puts on a Spurs uniform. Like, I think
he had the big series versus the Nuggets in 2019.
Well, yeah, and if you look at what he was doing, he was getting to the rim. Like, he was, you know, if he got an open shot, but he's, you know, just masterfully attacking those closeouts. So like, I think if he was on another team, he would probably play more as a pure point guard. You know,
yeah. Be speaking more effective. Of guards who can play both ends, I would probably put a guy like Derek White in that bucket to where you're above average guarding, you're above average initiating offense.
I really want him to see like on a team where he can just be the point guard and see what happens, because, you know, there's obviously limitations to his scoring game. It seems he's just like not quite there as a mid range and 3-point shooter, but like still like. I think he kind of plays a different role to what he would ideally. And then I'm pretty impressed by the fact that he's been willing to like shoot those threes for a while for Spurs, like even when DeRozan was still there. Because if you can turn it up, like I feel like that's an issue with pure point guards. Sometimes they have that issue, like getting those shots up. Derek White is, he's got that ability. So, yeah, anyway, but... But I just think DeJounte, the main sell is, I think he's a good isolation player. I like his pick and roll against drop, especially. I think he's really good there. So I think he does enough as a creator to where, like, he's just is at that level. He deserves to be in that conversation. So yeah.
Awesome.
I'm definitely low on the mini guys. Like. Yeah, I'm definitely.
I realize I might be a little early on putting Ant in the All-Star team or in the All-Star game, I should say. But my kind of whole motto is I'd rather be a year early than a year late. But I definitely understand if reasonably, I don't think he's going to make the team this year. As we saw, Wiggins is starting the game. I think Wiggins is probably that's probably the spot that could have gone to Ant, but. You know, deservedly, Wiggins is playing such a prominent role on a winning team that I don't mind that. But what was 1, 2, 3 players that you felt kind of bad about snubbing in the West?
Yeah, so AD for one.
He would have been on mine if he stayed healthy or if the team just played a little bit better when he was healthy. I know that it's unfair to kind of put that all on him, given his burden both defensively and offensively and just the mileage on his body. But with that said, it just wasn't quite to the standard that we have for him.
Yeah, I just think there are too many moving parts with Lakers when he was playing. Like, start of the season, like he was the primary, and then it kind of shifted, especially with LeBron out, to Russ just pulling up from everywhere. Like he was looking to get his at the start, and then he started, you know, looking to pass more out of the post because he gets doubled like pretty consistently there. Like, then he gets injured. So I just think it was so many moving parts that made his offense look worse than it is. But I mean, the truth of the matter is his offense just hasn't been quite as good as usual. I still think he's going to be really good in the playoffs offensively, but yeah, I think that's the main thing. And then, he was a bit slower than usual defensively. Like, he didn't seem to make much of – I don't think he was doing as much as, say, like a Gobert. I think even, like, a Poeltl would do, like, in the pick and roll, just taking away, like, all the options. I think it could have been a bit better.
Poeltl's probably quietly one of the best 5 or 7 rim protectors in the league.
Oh, yeah, he's phenomenal indeed. To be honest, yeah, if the Spurs were not – so far below 0.500, maybe he should get some shout out in this sort of all-star conversation. But
I'll have to check up again. I believe their record is around 500 when Poeltl plays, and then they just crater when he doesn't. He's really
that makes prominent. Sense.
He's important for them.
Yeah. So AD and then probably Ingram, and then that's probably the two main ones. So Ingram, if you pick Ingram, I've got no issues with that. I don't think, I think in the end, I tweeted this to you a couple of hours ago. Like, Wiggins is in the end, like, probably quite far, even though I think he deserves a conversation. I just think, like, I feel like he's just such a weird player. Like, if he could do something as simple as, like, hit the pick and roll, hit a midi off, like, snaking the pick and roll. That alone, like, would have me so much more confident. Just basically, I don't think he just isn't consistent primary. Like, he's he just can't really be a primary at the NBA level, because of just all the weird intricacies of this game. Like, it's not just that. Like, it's not just like missing the mid.
He's a really good player, like, off the catch, or if it's straight line drive, like, he's pretty much unstoppable. Like, if he can catch and just take like one or two dribbles, you're not going to be able to get in front of him. But I definitely agree. It's not a diverse, like, pull-up portfolio. And then a lot of his threes are either catch and shoot or taking, like, one or two dribbles and stepping in.
Yeah, exactly, So I think his role in offense has not been not been that big. Like, you look at his numbers, 18 points per game, but, like, he's just, like, his offensive responsibility compared to, like, a DeJounte or Ingram is just night and day.
I don't want to say like a supercharged role player, but in a way that kind of, in the hierarchy of the Warriors, I definitely, of course, he's below Steph and Draymond, and I kind of put even like Jordan Poole ahead of him just in terms of shot making responsibility, ball handling responsibility. But obviously happy for him. I think that he was over critique for a few years, especially with how things ended in Minnesota. So not going to complain about that, but let the people know where they can find you if you're working on anything.
So Twitter at Free Malik Monk. The agenda never stops until I see him starting playoff games and for the Lakers or another team. That and then I will busier ahead of me going back to uni, but I am gonna make an effort to write a bit more and put out some more consistent work. I feel like I've said this like 20 times on podcasts.
No, I always say, oh, I got some writing stuff coming out.
But seriously, I'll make an effort. And most of my content would be on Twitter. To my thoughts, I clip a decent amount on there too. Mainly focus on probably mini, and then some dubs, kings, and just other stuff I find interesting about the NBA. And so if you're into that sort of stuff, just give me a follow there.
Awesome, first 3-time guest in the podcast is history.
Oh my god.
That is the title that you have, James. But thank you so much for coming on. And
bro, that's the best award or certification I've got in my life.
I'm flattered, so but appreciate that. Just love talking ball with you and being your friend and just
same.
Anyways, gotta have you on real soon again.
We will wait until there are multiple 3-time.
yeah, you're right. I got to get someone else on here first before I have you on for a 4th time. But
yeah, that'd be
great to see you, man. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks again to James for coming on the show. He does great stuff, so make sure you guys check him out on Twitter. Keep up with his content. As for me, I got to get moving. Per usual, ratings, reviews, shares, etc. are appreciated. That juice is the podcast algorithm, helps the show grow, and that constructive feedback is appreciated. That's all I have for you guys today. I'll be back again real soon. Have a great day.